Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. In 2020, Latinos became the largest minority voting bloc in the country. And as votes were tabulated last week, one thing that was demonstrated was the power of the Latino vote. It contributed to President Donald Trump winning Florida, but it also helped President-elect Joe Biden flip a historically red state like Arizona. The 2020 election has forced some to pause and reflect on the use of the term Latino vote. The election results could serve as proof that Latino voters don't act as a monolithic voting bloc, and the term can be misleading. WUWM's Angelina Mosher Salazar spoke to Dr. Stephanie Rivera-Berruz about the term Latino vote, and she begins by explaining the complexities about the makeup of the Latino demographic.
The term Latino, or Latina or Latinx, as some of us might have heard it, is a pan-ethnic label. And it's a label that is intended to capture both race and ethnicity in certain respects, as well as a kind of broad-reaching country of origin. So when we're talking about what it means to be Latino in the United States, we're really referring to a very complex and wide range of identities that have arrived or have been in what we refer to as the continental United States in very different ways. And their relationships to the United States are also just as complex as their stories of existence in relationship to the U.S. So in broadly speaking terms, Latino seems to capture everything and nothing at the same time. And as one of the things we're seeing with this election is that those complexities are all the more crystallized as we're trying to track political and civic engagement.
These levels of complexity include level of education, the generational divide, socioeconomic status within that large demographic. And I'm hoping if you could speak to the complexity right here in Milwaukee. What does the Latino population look like?
So Milwaukee, Wisconsin is a really interesting place in terms of its racial diversity and ethnic diversity because it is a what we call majority-minority city. It is a city that by raw numbers has more people of color than it does white people. However, you would never know this if you looked at who's in power and who really runs the city of Milwaukee. Right, the diversity of Milwaukee is not necessarily represented across the board. And so what we see in Milwaukee is that we have a very large community that is predominantly Mexican. But I want to be quick to note that when I say it's predominantly Mexican, that doesn't mean that everyone is from the same place in Mexico or that they arrived to the United States under the same types of conditions, even if they have the same country of origin. Again, showing the complexity of these types of experiences. And then this is further juxtaposed to a very large Puerto Rican population that also has a complex relationship with their arrivals to Milwaukee, if we're just thinking about Milwaukee specifically. And you also have the presence of people from other parts of Central America and the Caribbean present here, even if they're not necessarily part of the majority. So here I'm thinking of folks from Costa Rica. I'm thinking of folks from El Salvador. I'm thinking of people from the Dominican Republic. I'm thinking about people from Cuba. And this is just of the cross-section of people that I've met, right? There's, I'm sure, many, many more. But they might not rise to the level of noticing or legibility because they're numerically just not as present. But that doesn't mean they're not here. And that's an important thing to remember as we're thinking about how people vote.
You touched briefly on how someone's country of origin can influence or impact the relationship with the United States. And I'm wondering if you could just speak personally as a Puerto Rican woman, how has that impacted your relationship to being a citizen of the United States or your civic duty when participating in elections?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, because I think, I mean, in my personal case, but what I'm about to say will also, I think, speak to something broader, is that how we understand people's relationship to voting generally is also a complex story. And so we can't not appreciate those complexities, right? And so with the case of Puerto Rico, for instance, I have a really complicated relationship to voting because I know that even though I currently reside in the continental United States, and I know that my vote in particularly in these elections in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, have great impact and matter, I also know that this may not actually have a good consequence for the place that I come from, which has been and continues to be occupied, colonially occupied by the United States. Does that mean I didn't go vote? No. But does it mean that I have the same type of experience as other people might to the engagement with voting? Yes, right? And these are parts of the complexities that I think this election, just generally speaking across the board, really missed to see on all fronts. And these are the complexities of what it means to be Latino in the United States. And so from my personal position, right, what it means to vote for me is very complicated by the fact that I come from a place that has never known sovereignty. So I don't know what it's like to vote under free and sovereign conditions.
Should we still be saying the Latino vote?
Excellent question. So I think we really need to be honest about what it is that we're trying to track with racial and ethnic markers vis-a-vis voting blocks. And this election and the last election and the election before that, right? Elections in general tell us a lot about how these terms relate to each other. And what we're obviously seeing is that there isn't necessarily a correlation between how we're thinking about the racial and ethnic term Latino and the behavioral patterns that we anticipated with political and civic engagement. And so if we want those things to actually be tracking what's happening on the ground, then we might need to really reconsider what it is we're trying to capture with these terms, right? Just like we capture them with, say, the white vote, where we're always doing cross-sections about what it means to be white, educated, lives in urban spaces, doesn't live in urban spaces, has college education, right? These factors seem to matter when we're thinking about something like the white vote. But when we're talking about the Latino vote or the black vote, they're just these conglomerates of ethnic and racial labels. But it's not clear that we have a good grasp on what they're intended to capture.
So what I'm hearing from you is not that we need to abolish the language of Latino vote, but maybe we need to add more layers of complexity and descriptors to that. So what do you think is a better way forward?
I think we really need to appreciate the fact that all politics is place-based politics. So race is always going to be meaningful in how we think about political engagement, but how race operates in its context or how ethnicity needs to appreciate the places in which people are engaging. So the fact that Milwaukee is hyper-segregated matters for how we're going to try and predict how people are going to vote, right? The fact that the Rio Grande Valley is economically disenfranchised needs to be part of how we think about how people in those places will vote. And so we need to appreciate the importance of place for how race and ethnicity function as we're thinking about voting, particularly in the context of how people engage with politics and whether or not they're willing to vote in the first place.
Dr. Stephanie Rivera-Berruz is a social and political philosophy professor at Marquette University. She spoke with WUWM's Angelina Mosher Salazar. Following the election, writer and journalism professor Fernanda Santos wrote an article about the term Latino vote for the Washington Post. In it, Santos explains where both campaigns went wrong when trying to capture the so-called Latino vote and what can be done to harness the power of voters who are Latino in future elections. Santos spoke with WUWM's Angelina Mosher Salazar about her article.
Last week, you published an article in the Washington Post where you say, right there in the opening line, it was hard to keep a straight face Tuesday night, which, you know, we all know was election night, as one pundit after another fretted about the surprising levels of support for President Trump among Latino voters. And your reaction, resonated with many Latinos and Latino journalists. Why do you think that is?
What I ask you to think about and your listeners to think about is, imagine if for 30 minutes or for an entire segment on cable television, you were hearing political pundits talk about the white vote. Why did white people vote this way? Do you think there's a trend in the way white people are voting these days? You know, white people voted for Joe Biden this time. Do you think that the Democrats are now the dominant force among white voters? And we obviously don't do that, right? Because we accept and we understand that there is no such thing as a white voter. There are voters who are white. There are voters who are working class. There are voters who are college educated, et cetera, et cetera. But for some reason, we believe that the term Latino voters can explain and encompass every voter who happens to be Latino. And that is a hugely diverse population, hugely diverse. There is a little bit of everybody and everything within this group. So when I was writing this piece, that was the first thing that came to mind was my disgust at the fact that there were all these people talking about Latino voters without truly understanding what it means to be a Latino who votes.
So is it time to reimagine the way we talk about the Latino electorate? And in doing so, does that mean that we now abolish this problematic term, Latino voters?
Yes. Abolish Latino voters. Abolish the sleeping giant. You know, abolish all these phrases that we hear again and again and again every election season, and that serve to explain why a result went one way or it didn't go one way. You know, so I don't mind if you say voters who are Latino were more likely to vote for President Trump than Joe Biden. But if you're saying Latino voters, then I'm going to say you are assuming that we all vote the same way, that we are all a single block, you know, and it's been that way for as long as I can remember, mostly because while us Latinos can see the differences amongst ourselves, the people who created the label Latino voters, essentially white people, outsiders, people who are not part of this cohort, to explain this rising demographic group, have a very hard time understanding that this rising demographic group is, in reality, a group of Americans who have Latino heritage, or who were born in Latin America and then gained citizenship in the United States. That was the case with me. I'm from Brazil. I came here, married an American citizen, became an American citizen. Therefore, I am now an American of Latino descent. So when we vote, we're all Americans. As Americans, we represent various different groups, have various different histories, live very different realities. And this is how everybody, reporters, journalists, and just, you know, your neighbor should approach the choices that people make or don't make every election season.
Yes, of course. I mean, you bring up a very good point, Fernanda, that all of us as individuals encompass various identities, right? Like you just said yourself, I'm an American, I'm Brazilian, I'm a woman, I'm an immigrant. So tell me, Fernanda, which identity do you use to go to the polls?
I use all of them. And the way I make my choices is based on what the candidates are telling me. I think that for a lot of us who come from Latin America, what is politics is a lot about the issues, the topics, the platform that the candidates have. Are they speaking my language, so to speak? You know, are they, and I'm not talking about those like, you know, Spanish language radio ads. I'm talking about, are they speaking about issues that matter to me. In Brazil, I never I don't remember ever voting, saying I'm going to vote for a candidate of this or that party. I would say I'm voting for this person because he's speaking about the stuff that matters to me. And I think a lot of Latinos vote that way because that's how they were sort of raised in the world of politics. And that's very difficult in a country like the United States, where politics is so closely associated with Democratic or Republican, to the point that in certain states like Arizona, where I live, you have to be registered to a party even to be able to vote in the primaries. So there's no such thing as, not being registered to a party, but also wanting to vote. I mean, these two thoughts are incompatible. So I bring all my identities to the polls, and I go after the people who are speaking about topics that matter to me in ways that I think are important to me.
So what do you think is the takeaway here? What lessons can the media, political pundits, and campaigns learn from years of erroneously talking about Latino voters as a monolithic voting bloc? I mean, as the United States becomes increasingly more diverse across racial and ethnic lines.
We need to stop thinking of these terms, Latino or Black or Asian American or Native American, as defining of entire populations. Latino does not define me. It's part of who I am. That does not define you either, right? A Black person is Black, but also many other things, because there is this stereotypical or preconceived notion of what a Latino is or isn't like, of what a Black person is or isn't like, of what an Asian American is and isn't like. Even this term Asian American, gosh, Asia is such a huge continent with so many countries that are so different. It's demeaning, and it's trying to squeeze a square into a circle. You just can't do that. So let's stop using these labels as that condition ourselves to think of them as defining of an entire group, as if they were all the same. And let's use the label to just and accept it as one characteristic of a diverse group of Americans that happen to have different ethnicities, different races, different countries of origin, different histories, different levels of education, different socioeconomic status, and on and on and on, right? And let's just accept that we are now dealing with Americans. And how do American votes, where it depends on where they live, what they are doing at that moment in their lives, how things are going for them, etc. So forget these terms as defining of all of us, and start thinking of us as individuals. And you can think of how my Latino heritage, or the fact that I am from Latin America, I was actually born there, helps define who I am. But don't think that because I am Latina, you have figured me out, because you haven't.
Fernanda, thank you so much for speaking with me.
It was great to talk to you, Angelina.
Fernanda Santos is a writer and journalism professor at Arizona State University. She spoke with WUWM's Angelina Mosher Salazar about her recent article published in the Washington Post on Latino voters.